It's being re-energized with a bunch of shows now. It's exciting. And re-energized, rather, with, I mean, it was always an energy in the Windsor, of course. But there's kind of a bit of a different thing going on these days. There's kind of some different kinds of shows in there. A little community being built there. A little bit more. This one excites me. Saturday, November 24th. That's the Smith Fits. Very interesting. It's the Smiths and the Misfits kind of conceptually colliding. Friday, November 30th, the Judas Priest Dance Party. That sounds fantastic. Going backwards here, Saturday, November 18th, from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Condominium with guests, Salt Lick. The Windsor Hotel. It's right across the back lane from the pyramid. Right across the back lane. It should build a skyway. More at the Windsor, Friday, November 23rd, the Comeback Kid. December 1st, the Big Fun Launch Party. Details, we're awaiting details on that. Windsor, Windsor, Windsor. Lots going on. One other thing going here. I'll just tell you, Art from the Heart. It's tonight and tomorrow. Starts at 7 o'clock tonight at the Magnus Eliasson Rec Center. We'll see you there. Thanks. Stay tuned for Warning Shots. Thanks again to Gary Dells for his receiving of the mic that was passed to him today as part of Pass the Mic. Talk to you next week.
Friday afternoons on CKUW 95.9 FM is brought to you by Half Pints Brewing Company, Winnipeg's only local brewery. Think local, drink local. Half Pints.
Yes, hello and good day. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. And CKUW 95.9 FM is your listener-driven radio station on the FM dial. I'm your host, Scott Price. Today is November the 16th, 2012. And it's a great day because I'm back in the chair. I had a lengthy hiatus due to a couple different things that were happening. But of course, the last couple of weeks, Alex Patterson had the chair and he did a great job of covering a whole series on climate change. David Suzuki, Bill McKibben, Alana Mitchell, great stuff. Go CKW.ca. Go to the broadcast schedule. go find those last couple episodes. Also, on ckwnews.ca, those interviews will be uploaded hopefully in the next week or so. But I'm happy to be back. And on today's show, I'm very excited because a great friend of the show and a great, really, I mean, a great a great figure in alternative media here in Winnipeg that probably a lot of people don't know about, but John Shurto from Intercontinental Cry will be on to talk about indigenous struggles in Ethiopia, Brazil, and Indonesia. If you don't, go check out intercontinentalcry.org. John does amazing work, and it's what he coordinates and publishes and edits. I mean, it's indigenous struggles around the world. There's news on there you're not going to, you'd be hard pressed to find in English speaking media, period. And it's great. And hey, he's based out of Winnipeg. Isn't that incredible? So he's going to be on to talk over the phone about what's going on in Ethiopia. The World Bank is connected to some forced evictions that are going on. Indonesian troops, along with Australian special forces, are trying to silence a peaceful pro-independence indigenous group. And in Brazil, the government passed into law Decree 303, which allows military occupation and the dismantling of consultation on construction projects on indigenous lands. Now, he'll give you all the whole background and all those on those three issues. Really interesting, as always. And, you know, after the show, go check out intercontinentalcry.org. There's a great free ebook called People, Land, and Truth. All sorts of, it covers indigenous struggles worldwide. Quite incredible. So that's what's coming up today. And, of course, you're also going to have your international news and brief in a moment. But as always, I like to give a couple of quick announcements before we get into the main part of the show. Now, there are many locally produced spoken word shows that cover current events in an engaging and in-depth manner on CKUW 95.9 FM. There's People of Interest, Mud and Water, Inner City Voices, Black Mass, Say It Sista. Check out the broadcast schedule for showtimes and for free show archives. So go to ckuw.ca for that. Now, at the top of the show, as I said, CKUW is an alternative listener-driven media source. We take listener-driven very seriously. That means that not only are you supporting us by listening right now, but we also rely on your donations every February during Fund Drive. You can also, so in lieu of that, Fund Drive is a big part of it, but it also means participation from you listeners year-round. Not just during Fund Drive. So you can get a hold of me. Now you can call the station, the office, 786-9782. Now the online, the on-air phone is 774-6877. Put 204 in front of that, of course. But I'm going to have John on the line, so it's obviously going to be busy. But So you can phone. You can also email me, warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter @warningshots. You can also follow CKUW on Twitter to know what's going on and all that kind of stuff. So all those things are very important for us. I always like getting feedback from listeners or hearing from you when you phone. I like that. Obviously today, live interview. So, you know, maybe when there's a, you know, when John's off of the phone and there's a musical break, you give a call if you'd like, or call the office or shoot me an email. Follow me on Twitter @warningshots or @CKUW on Twitter. Now, let's get right into it. Let's get right into some of the news happening around the world right now. Now, here is your international news in brief. This comes from the NATO Allied Command Operations. Earlier this month, NATO Maritime Command's Deputy Commander, Vice Admiral Christian Canova, accompanied a group of representatives from the NATO Parliamentary Assembly during its visit to Djibouti. Djibouti is in East Africa. The aim of this visit was to explain the contribution that armed forces and military facilities stationed in Djibouti can make to supporting the implementation of NATO's new strategic concept, focusing on its counter-piracy mission known as Operation Ocean Shield. Reflecting on the visit, of Vice Admiral Canova declared, "Fortunately, the process of regional capacity building is ongoing in Djibouti, Kenya, Yemen, and soon in Tanzania with the EU civilian capacity building operation. NATO's regional maritime capacity building and national initiatives. I'm confident with the capabilities regional navies and coast guards have developed in recent years. Their participation in exercises such as Cutlass Express not only shows that they are taking an active step in securing their own waters, but that they are also committed to play a more active role in the overall regional security." Weekly news updates on the Americas reports. After more than 2 months of investigation, on November 9th, Mexico's Federal Attorney General's office confirmed that it was formally charging 14 federal police agents for an August the 24th attack on a U.S. embassy van on a road just south of Mexico City. The agents claim they mistook the van's occupants, two agents of the USA Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and a Mexican Marine, for members of a gang connected to a local kidnapping. The two CIA agents were wounded in the incident. Investigators determined that the police agents were driving private cars and were in civilian clothes when they were attacked when they attacked the embassy's van, which was surrounded by police agents' vehicles. Investigators said the van, which was heavily armored, was hit with 152 bullets. The Attorney General's office formal charges did mention possible links to organized crime, but the sources indicated that they thought three of the police agents had ties to a drug cartel. And that is just some of the news going around the world right now. Stay tuned to hear from John Chertow on indigenous struggles in Brazil, Ethiopia, and Indonesia. Do stay tuned. This is Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM.
No mark-raking journalist. left to take stock of the wholesale omission of outside perspectives. How does it make you feel to know that you voted for this? Dreams and your children. You just sat there believing in this bullshit system, just wishing the mob would magically come to its senses. How does it make you feel to know you just stood by and watched it?
Yes, hello. We are back. This is CKUW 95.9 FM right here on... this is Warning Shots on CKUW 95.9 FM. And I'm your host, Scott Price. And right now we are joined with John Shurto. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Excellent. Now, John is the publisher and editor of Intercontinental Cry. Now, for the people who haven't heard of it, they probably should. So, John, could you just talk a little bit about what Intercontinental Cry is and what you guys do?
Okay. It's basically just a grassroots journal that's devoted to the global indigenous movement. We primarily focus on writing commentary and news, and also providing video about the more lesser known and more more urgent indigenous struggles, land struggles, or human rights abuses against indigenous populations by governments, corporations, and NGOs.
Yes, what's the website's name if people want to check that out?
It's intercontinentalcry.org.
Excellent. Yes, and I encourage listeners to go check that out. So now, John, we're here to talk about, there's a couple different struggles going on. And so first, let's look at Brazil here. So indigenous peoples throughout Brazil are mobilizing to repeal a dangerous new anti-Indian law that basically says that the Brazilian government can basically go right in and military occupation. They don't need to consult to do any kind of construction project. So this is known as Decree 303. So talk about how this came about and kind of what is this about here?
Okay, well, you actually got me there. I don't know how it came about. all I know is what it proposes and the effect it's going to have on mm-hmm. everything, on the indigenous movement in Brazil. For context, I should point out that there's over 220 distinct peoples in Brazil. Many of them are, struggling for their land rights to reclaim their lands. And as I'm sure most listeners will be familiar with, trying to stop projects like the Belo Monte Dam in Pará, Brazil, which threatens to displace 40,000 people. There's also other significant struggles, like what's happening with the Guarani people, many of whom are living in makeshift camps by busy highways, without land, living under tarps and garbage bags, waiting for the government to make good on its word and give back land that's been stolen by corporations and private landholders. Mm-hmm. However, this decree came about, it threatens to unravel everything that's happening. It's like a dark cloud that's just came out of nowhere, as far as I can tell.
I was reading in the decree, and the language is extremely blunt. So, I mean, talk a bit about what's in this. I kind of talked about it in the introduction, but what's in this decree exactly?
Well, there's basically, there's a set of five or six provisions, significant ones as far as I'm concerned, I guess. The first major one is that it will permit the government to, or rather the military, to go on to any reserve in the country for basically any reason they want, and, you know, without the need to consult or, you know, get the gain the consent of anybody. Then it's also going to allow the government to carry forward any construction project, including hydrodams and mining projects, without consulting anybody. And it's going to prohibit the demarcation of new land. Now, that's the process that the government uses to return lands back to people like the Guarani. Brazil actually has a pretty solid policy in place. In fact, on several occasions, they've sent in police forces to evict non-indigenous land holders and occupiers on indigenous land. You know, always with compensation, but, you know, the fact that they actually do that in the past, you know, it's remarkable to me because, you know, I don't know of any other government that's ever done that. But that is going to come to an end by the looks of it if this decree goes through. And there's also one section of land, I don't have it here in front of me, but there's one area of land that's going to be given to some NGO because apparently the indigenous peoples who live there are, I guess, according to the, you know, government's opinions, are too stupid to take care of the land themselves. So they're going to give it to this private, environmental organization.
Do you know the name of this organization?
Oh, offhand, no.
No, okay. Well, that's fine. Maybe we can dig it up later. Now, in reading into this, does this not violate the Brazilian Constitution?
Of course, absolutely.
So how is the Brazilian government justifying this?
Sorry?
How is the Brazilian government justifying this new decree?
Well,
not very well.
Well, it's because they want to. End of discussion.
Mm. Wow.
They're not concerned about that. As far as I can tell, you know, it's the same thing with the Belo Monte Dam. You know, like there was never any consultation supposed to. There was never any consultations over that, and you know they were supposed to do that, but the government was like, well, too bad. You know, we're going forward with this, and. You know, of course, with all the international pressure and the local movement of the Zingo River peoples, who are opposing the Belo Monte Dam, you know, pushed against the government and forced them to consult them, but after the fact, right? So it's this is Brazil's strategy nowadays is just, you know, up your nose, we're going to do what we want. You don't like it, leave. And that's what they've been trying to do with the decree, but the. You know, the indigenous peoples throughout the country have been mobilizing pretty strongly against this new law. You know, since it was first proposed in July, you know, they've organized at least a dozen protests. They've blocked roads, railways. They've occupied government offices, and you know, from the word go, it actually forced the government to suspend the decree. In my opinion, it was to weaken the mobilization. But it was also just to, you know, to discuss it amongst themselves a little bit more. But it was, again, suspended in October, and now it's being handed over to the National Congress. So you know, they're getting the right now to decide the future of the indigenous peoples in the country. It's worth noting, too, that this is almost exactly what happened in Peru in 2009. Hopefully listeners will be familiar with that struggle, what happened in early June with the Peruvian military assaulting the Aujan and Wampus peoples. And this was a massive protest because Peru had proposed similar laws to what Brazil is proposing now, which would have opened up indigenous lands to industrial projects. And the Aujan Wampus set up like 9 blockades on this road, and you know, after this violent attack, you know, Peru pulled back, handed over to Congress, and then Congress did the right thing, and they, you know, put the laws in the garbage. So hopefully, this is what Brazil will do, but it's really up in the air right now.
You mentioned about the response. So as I understood it, a lot of indigenous peoples marched on the Brazilian government. Like there was a big show of force?
Oh, there's
correct.
Well, not so much force, but you know, there.
I mean, just like protest is what I mean.
Yeah, like there's been over two dozen. There was just one other protest just 2 weeks ago where a bunch of communities from northeastern Brazil went to the capital, I believe, to show their opposition to the decree. But you know, there's I guess a couple months now, a bunch of 15 leaders from throughout the country occupied the offices of the Auditor General, I believe it was. He's the one who ultimately suspended the decree on both occasions. So yeah, like they're doing everything they can. Surprisingly, the movement against the Belmonte Dam, which is called the Zingu Forever Alive movement, in Portuguese, though, hasn't really taken a position against the decree 303 yet. At least I haven't seen any massive campaigns. They're hyper focused on stopping the dam, which the government is, you know, bending over backwards to move forward.
Hmm.
But once I'm hoping they're being strategic about it. You know, because they have such an impressive international reach nowadays. Whereas, like, just this overall situation, though, really isn't getting, you know, any international attention. You know, activists or even, like, activists in Canada and elsewhere around the world are all focusing on the Belmonte Dam. And this is happening, like, you know, right beside it, you know, around it. But nobody's noticing yet, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we got a couple more stories to get into, too, but I just wanted to quickly, because you pointed this out on Facebook, there's these pictures that they claim have things to do with the Belmonte Dam, but it has nothing to do with it.
No.
So I don't know. I'll just describe it for listeners. But there's a picture of these sort of these armed SWAT like military guys looking like they're they have one guy like in a headlock, and, yeah. and they're pushing against looks like a woman and stuff like that.
Woman
and child. And then it says, oh, you know, this is the Belmonte Dam. But you pointed out that the those pictures have nothing to do with it, correct?
Yeah, nothing at all. Those photos were taken in 2008, and they are the man and the woman and child in the photos are the Patajo people, who are, you know, in Para Brazil, you know, or sorry, what's that region called? I can't remember what it's called. Anyways, they have absolutely nothing to do with the Belmonte Dam. They're in a different region altogether, and the photos were taken, you know, 4 years ago. And also that message that's being spread around, which I believe actually originated from Anonymous, or at least it was made popular through them. It claims that the Kayapo were being terrorized by the government, that they're, you know, being dragged by their feet away from their land to make the project forward. But, you know, the Kayapo are only one of 16 different peoples who are being affected by the dam.
Right.
So this, but there's other it's misinformation. I don't want to say disinformation. It's misinformation that's being spread around by well-intentioned leftists who aren't informed. And I personally have a bit of a problem with that, you know, because it's undermining us, you know, and it's making everybody who believes it look stupid. So it's undermining our credibility, you know. But then there's been other disinformation going around too, like about the Guarani, you know, like the New Independent, the UK magazine, published a story that said that the Guarani were going to commit mass suicide if Brazil evicted this community from their land. But that's not what the Guarani said. You know, they said they're going to resist their eviction to the death. You know, like,
yeah,
like there's a big
very
difference
different.
There. So,
yeah.
You know, I for regarding all that, I would, you know, recommend that people, you know, don't just take what they see at face value, but rather, you know, look into it.
Yeah,
and inform themselves.
Yeah, don't just click like and then click share, and don't bother looking at what it is that is.
You're
very right in that, and I think well taken that a lot of people on the left need to really be careful about what they're doing with that kind of stuff. Now, moving on to Indonesia. So now the Indonesian, there's a counterterrorism squad, and they're going after these a peaceful pro-independent a movement there in Indonesia. So talk about this situation.
Okay, well, first, just to be clear, it's not, strictly speaking, you know, if we're going to take the official line, then it is Indonesia. But like if you speak to a traditional Papuan activist, his mouth would drop if you said that. It's West Papua.
Okay.
Which was occupied. Well, it was handed over, you know, with a bow on top, by the United Nations. I'll provide some context there. West Papua is in the western side of the island of New Guinea. It was handed over after a controversial referendum that was supervised by the UN. This happened in 1963. There's a lot of history here, and I was actually going to go into the detail about how the U.S. Pressured the Dutch into giving the area over to Indonesia, because this was during the Cold War, and you know, the U.S. saw a strategic ally in Indonesia, so this was a present to keep them on side. And Indonesia had actually, as a part of this handover, they had agreed to let, quote unquote, agreed to let the Papuans decide their own future via a referendum. But the referendum, which is what I just mentioned, which the UN supervised, was a pathetic joke, because only 1,054 Papuans were allowed to take part in it, and all of whom were appointed by the Indonesian government.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of that referendum was resoundingly in favor of integration into Indonesia. And as a result of that, or at least while this was going on, a pro-independence, an armed pro-independence movement emerged, which has, you know, since then engaged in a war against Indonesia for independence.
Mm-hmm.
The people of West Papua have been hit very hard by that. Some human rights organizations estimate that as many as 400,000 Papuans have been killed since this began, and as many as 100,000 have been displaced. The Indonesian government has been, you know, many call it genocide. They've been breaking their backs over, you know, trying to defeat, you know, not only this independent movement, but, you know, the will and the cultures of the Papuan people, you know, which is immensely diverse too. Like there's several hundred different languages are spoken there. It's a very diverse region. They also target civilian populations. They routinely arrest, torture, kill, or otherwise disappear popular leaders, cultural leaders, civic leaders. You know, people who call for peace, people who call for war. You know, whatever. You know, they basically do whatever they want to just destroy the movement. Period.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to note too that the situation has seriously changed in the recent decade. On the side of the Papuans, a significant, you know, pro peace movement, independence movement has emerged. Most notably with the West Papua National Committee, or the KNPB, and they're organizing a lot of nonviolent demonstrations. And, you know, they're trying to find an amicable agreement with Indonesia that would still allow the Papuan to retain some degree of autonomy that, you know, in a way that works for them, not just Indonesia. So this is still growing, but, you know, Indonesia has at the same time become more fascistic. You know, they're you know, going out of their way now not just to destroy the OPM, the Free Papua Movement, which is the military focused campaign. You know, they're also trying to, you know, obliterate the KNPB. You know,
mm-hmm.
Torturing leaders, arresting them, just terrorizing villagers. You know, and organizing a psychological war. There's a good media source online called West Papua Media. They who are, you know, reporting on a lot of this stuff, and you know, they pointed out last month that Indonesia's counterterrorism squad, which you mentioned earlier, joined up with a bunch of military forces to raid all these different villages in order to grab some activists that they accuse of planting bombs and possessing bomb making materials. And these activists belong to the peaceful KNPB.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, blocked airstrips, they closed off a local market, and they began sweeping through all these villagers. Church sources in the region who act as, you know, channels of information to the international community, because, like, the press and, you know, international observers aren't allowed to go to West Papua. They're, you know, specifically banned by Indonesia. They say that these military forces are targeting specific people based on their bloodlines and their clan relations, you know, which says to me that they're, you know, trying to destroy the political authority, right? Which is much like what Canada and the U.S. did on this continent, right? You undermine the strength of the community to, you know, put in your own strengths. So, you know, like, it's a crazy situation. There's abuses being reported by Indonesian forces constantly, like daily, practically. It's also actually interesting to note that this campaign that I just mentioned with all these raids took place just as the international community started paying attention to the situation in West Papua, because it's been ignored for ages. So just as you know, people in Australia, which has a vested interest in the region, starts, you know, talking about referendums and rights and you know, peace, suddenly, all of a sudden, the KNPB is a monster that has to be stopped, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's psy war, psychological warfare. You know, they're just trying to destroy the credibility of the KNPB and mm-hmm. and kill them on the ground.
The other interesting thing in reading up about this and these latest actions is that the Australian Special Forces were also involved in some of this stuff, correct?
Well, that's Indonesia's counterterrorism squad.
Oh, that's the same thing.
Yeah, they're called Densus 88. They're actually funded and possibly trained, definitely funded by Australia and the U.S. I believe they've also been trained by the U.S., but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But yeah, like, they're, so that's Indonesia has other interests there too. Like, they have mining operations in Papua and other, you know, business interests in Papua and the other side of the island as well.
Oh, okay.
Where stands the state of Papua New Guinea?
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know it was when I first read through it. I thought that it was Australia's just sort of came into it. I didn't realize it was that much of a connection. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now the last one we're going to get to, and then you also have a couple of announcements. Ethiopia. Now, so there's people in the southwest Ethiopia have. Said that the World Bank is complicit in carrying out some pretty grave human rights abuses. So talk about this, what's going on in Ethiopia, in southwest Ethiopia, and this relocation plan.
Yeah, okay. Well, the government of Ethiopia is carrying out a program to settle about 1.5 million people across the country. And this villagization program is supposed to be a voluntary process that offers these people increased access to basic services, improved food security, better access to education and whatnot, in exchange for their land.
Mm-hmm.
So, voluntary process. I'm actually not clear on how it's working for others, but the ANWAC say that they're being forced to take part in the process. And they're being terrorized during it.
Mm-hmm.
It should be noted too that the ANWAC have they've had to deal with generations upon generations of slavery. That is, it could have gone back as far back as the 1100s, and it didn't end until after World War II. But even so, like, the ANWAC are still viewed and treated as lesser people. I'm still not entirely sure of how others are viewed and treated in the region, but, you know, the ANWAC are, you know, in some cases seen as animals, even, you know.
Wow.
Like, just disposable people. So that's obviously true now, especially if this villagization program is as it appears to be. You know, with everybody else getting the option to trade their land for these, you know, glorious benefits, you know, these civilization, I guess, where the ANWAC are being forced into these villages, They're not getting better access to food. They're not getting land to cultivate, and they're agriculturalists, so they depend on the land. And then there's the abuses, the arbitrary arrests, the detentions, the torture, the rape, the extrajudicial killings. You know, the fact that many of the Anahuac are trying to just leave the region altogether because they, many of them believe that this is the quote unquote realization of the December 13, 2003 mass killing that left more than 424 educated male Anahuacs dead, more than 1,000 wounded, and many more seeking asylum. Now the Anahuac's population is about 350,000, but because of that, what happened in December 2003, about one-third of the population now lives in the U.S. and Canada, and they also sought asylum in surrounding surrounding regions in Sudan and Kenya, I believe, during these events, and they're also leaving their lands now to escape what Ethiopia is carrying out currently. There's actually a pretty solid Anahuac organization in Canada based in Saskatoon called the Anahuac Justice Council. And they're, organizing on behalf of everybody that, of the refugees and the people who are still, still on their traditional lands, targeting the World Bank to stop funding this because they're, they've provided, $1.4 billion in grants and loans to the government of Ethiopia for, quote-unquote, improving access to basic services. But the government is using it, to do what they're doing to the Anahuac. And I believe there are also some politicians in Ethiopia are also, they're getting their monthly paycheck or whatever out of this fund. So they're, pushing on the World Bank to, stop this, which they should, especially if the World Bank, meant what it said when a couple of years back it started talking about how, or it enacted a policy for free prior informed consent, and that's, and everybody applauded that because, wow, that's like the first major international organization to, promote that. And nobody even wants to utter those words here in Canada or or elsewhere in the world. Consent, not consultation, but consent. And here's the World Bank, so it's like, yay, right? But they're not. There's no consent involved in this. Like they're not talking to the Anahuac. They're just throwing the money at the government. And so, yeah, that's the World Bank for you.
I started reading into some of the reports on this stuff, and it's pretty. I mean, it's interesting. It's also pretty damning about what's going on there. Now, also to kind of turning more to home, you had a couple announcements about some Indigenous struggles right here in Manitoba and some things that are happening. So, tell the listeners about that.
Okay. Well, first thing is a protest that's coming up on November 26th at the Manitoba Legislative Building. And it begins at noon, and it's to support the Lake St. Martin First Nation, which was forced off their land by the province last year. The government actually flooded the reserve and moved everyone into an old military base in order to save a group of Manitoba farmers and cottagers. The government actually already said that. Sorry, I'm reading from my note here. The community is in the process of trying to raise funds for a new community. They're trying to raise about $1 million, which is about 1/40th of what the government spent to displace Lake St. Martin, which has like a population of 2,000. So at the protest, there's also going to be a film shown called Flooding Hope, the Lake St. Martin story. And that film is going to be shown inside the opposition chambers during the protest. So if you go down there and nobody's outside, they're inside watching the film. And I hope some people will show up there because this is a, absolutely horrendous and, unacceptable situation that the government needs to take responsibility for. The other event is a celebration to mark the 10th anniversary of the Grassy Narrows blockade. and that's a potluck that's going to be at the Thunderbird House on December 4th at 7 p.m. And yeah, I would recommend people go there to show some love and support, and if they're not familiar with the situation, and to learn about what the struggle is about, because it's the longest standing blockade in Canada, and despite the considerable support that Grassing Arrows has get, the situation isn't really changing on the ground. You know, there have been some positive movements with the pullback of logging companies, but, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, the mercury problem is still going on in Grassing Arrows. You know, logging is still going on. So, you know, we need to show support and, build up a constant pressure on the government to, you know, take responsibility for itself and stop this, you know, anti-Indigenous garbage. Enough is enough, especially the fact, especially considering how bad things are getting in Canada now. You know, during our talk today, we've talked about what's going on in these other countries, but the same thing's happening here, with Harper's grand push to bring private home ownership on reserve and his you know, cutting of all this funding of all these, you know, key services and organizations in this country that are meant to, you know, empower youth and, you know, protect women, and it's just going to get worse from there. If we don't start pushing up against this stuff, then, you know, he's just going to take it further. And that's what all the governments around the world are doing, right? They're going as far as they can, and if we let them, then they'll just go further. So we have to kind of draw a line here. And, you know, showing some support for Grassing Arrows is a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Lake St. Martin, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the lakes, I encourage people to go. That's the 26th, correct? Monday?
Yep, at noon.
At noon at the ledge. I'm going to go down and check it out. And I encourage people to go and look into it. You can also, I think you can find the Flooding Hope on YouTube.
Yeah.
And go watch it. I mean, especially I know there's a lot of more left-leaning listeners who might vote NDP and stuff like that. I mean, the Lake St. Martin thing happened under the watch of a provincial NDP government. So you should probably ask yourself some questions about this kind of stuff. And if you're going to be, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things to say about Harper, but there's stuff going on with this provincial government that's also horrendous as well that I think people, you can't turn a blind eye to just because ideologically you might be slightly more closer to them.
For sure.
That's
all the more reason to confront them and hold them accountable.
Exactly. Precisely, John. So I thank you for all this great information and about stuff going on abroad as well as the Indigenous struggles going on right here in Canada.
Sure.
So and thank you for all that you do at Intercontinental Cry. I will say it again to the listeners. I encourage you to go there, intercontinentalcry.org. What you do is the kind of coverage there is like, I don't know where else I'd find some of this stuff. Honestly, I'd be hard pressed to find this stuff.
That's exactly why we're doing it.
Yes. So thank you very much again, John, for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on and letting the people know about what's going on around the world as well as right here in Canada. So thank you very much and have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was John Shurto from Intercontinental Cry. We're going to have a quick little break and then we will be back with more Warning Shots. This is Warning Shots on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Hey there, if you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM and you're into what you're hearing, why don't you give us a call? Our on-air line is 774-6877.
We'll be right back. but a fool. And to help you understand, your roommate will tell you about his journey of free soul.
Yes, and that concludes Warning Shots for November the 16th, 2012. You just heard a quick little break, and then you heard today music from Propagandhi off their new record, Failed States. Earlier on in the show, you heard Note to Self, and that one was just Rattan Kane. It's one of my favorite tracks off of that. Great band, amazing band. Whoops. I got a chance to go and see them a little while ago at West End, my first Propagandhi show. It was quite an amazing experience. So you also heard John Chertow from Intercontinental Cry. We're talking about indigenous struggles in Indonesia, Brazil, Ethiopia, as well as right here at home, Lake St. Martin Reserve, decided to be flooded by the NDP provincial government, as well as Grassy Narrows, one of the longest running blockades and issues there with indigenous people right here at home. So, you know, as much as this is international news, I always like to bring it on home. And, you know, you can do, there's things going on right here. You know, it's not, you know, and you're not powerless or anything against this stuff. You can start acting. And that's, I think that's an important point that I always try to show in this, you know, point that out. So that was today's show. If you want to get a hold of me, Twitter at Warning Shots. You can also follow CKUW. Just look up CKUW or Warning Shots to find me there, as well as the station, so you get to know what's going on. CKUW.ca, broadcast schedule. You can get all the shows, the last six shows, as a podcast. You can subscribe to it. It'll come to you. Play it in iTunes or whatever it is you feel like playing it on. CKUWnews.ca. We put up featured stories and interviews. There should be a couple more updates coming up in the next week with Alex Patterson's climate change piece. Yes, and contact on-air office phone 786-9782, 204-786-9782. My email, warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com, and Michael Welsh's email, news director, ckuwnews at rockmail.com. So I was your host, Scott Price, and I will be back to talk to you guys tomorrow, next Friday, and this will be looking at a critical look at environmental NGOs, who, you know, John Chertow just kind of pointed out that they, you know, some of them, some NGOs are into some not such great things going around the world, but this one looks specifically more at Canada and the role that they play and that kind of stuff. So that'll be next Friday. Come Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Tune in for that. Yeah, so take it, you know, as always, have a safe and fun weekend. Take care of one another, and I'll talk to you next week. And of course, coming up next is Mercy of Slumber, as well as right now is going to be the Community Cupboard. So I'll talk to you everyone soon. Have a great day.
Grab yourself a pen and some paper. It's time for CKW's Community Cupboard. Announcements and resources from and in your community. If you have a public service announcement or community resource to share, contact us at 786-9782 or email ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca.
And here's your Community Cupboard. The Stroke Recovery Association of Manitoba public service announcement. Have you or a loved one suffered a stroke? If you have, contact us at Stroke Recovery Association of Manitoba. We have been helping stroke survivors return to mainstream society for 40 years now, and we can help you. The contact information by telephone, 204-942-2880. Don't wait, a conversation will cost you nothing. I'll give you the number again, 204-942-2880. Drum lessons with Chris Bauer, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 6 p.m. This goes from, it goes till November the 29th, ages 12 to 19. It's free. Drop in, no registration required, snacks and equipment provided. This is at the Weston Cultural Center, 586 Ellis Avenue. For more information, you can email info@wecc.ca or you can phone 204-783-6918. That's free drum lessons. Sounds like fun. The Winnipeg's Arts Council and Winnipeg's Public Art Program Initiative applications from community are accepting applications from community groups for a community-based with art and youth with art programs. Youth with art matches artists with community groups to collaborate on projects based on community goals. Exploration on and the art making process are central to the program. Community groups from diverse sectors who have a history of working together are invited to apply. Now, Youth with Art is a pilot model after the established With Art program that focuses on youth of 6 to 21. Youth engaged community groups who would like to collaborate on youth focused art projects are invited to apply. The deadline for application is January the 15th, 2013. But I'm looking here and there's no other information. So I would go look up the Winnipeg Arts Council and the Winnipeg's Public Art Program for that. There's actually no contact information for that, which is unfortunate. Anyways, that was your Community Cupboard. And as always, stay tuned for Mercy of Slumber.